Velkommen til Digitaliseringspodden. Programlederen Jens Christian Bang. Digitaliseringspodden et samarbeid mellom Computer World og Already On.
Velkommen til Digitaliseringspodden. Ukens podd kommer i sin helhet til å dreie seg om Ukraina og softwareutvikling der, og da spesielt. I lys av krigen og invasjonen fra Russland. Nå det 10 dager siden Russland gikk inn i Ukraina. Over 1 million mennesker på flukt. Og det fremdeles mange mennesker som prøver å holde hjulene i gang i Ukraina. Ukens gjest min kollega og venn, Oleg Nesterov, som jeg har jobbet med i 12 år. Han utviklingssjef i Already On, og sørger for at alle våre prosjekter går. Vi har en gjeng der, og så vi 8 stykker i Norge, så vi selvfølgelig rammet av det som har skjedd. Og nå gir vi litt innblikk i hvordan vi har det i Ukraina, og hvordan vi prøver å holde julen i gang. Da skal jeg sette over til min gjest som med på Teams, og da vil resten av sendingen fortsette på engelsk. Hei, Oleg!
Hallo, Christian!
Velkommen til Digitaliseringspodden.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you. How are you?
Yeah, nice to see you.
How are you doing in this situation?
I'm okay. I mean, we have to stand strong, as we say here. And we do that, okay so far, I would say. So, I'm okay.
Are you in a safe area right now?
I am, yeah. Well, it's hard to stay safe these days because, almost the whole territory of Ukraine is under shelling or airstrikes. But yeah, I'm in a relatively safe place. I would phrase it like that. So I'm okay.
That's very good. The safe part, not the shelling and airstrikes, yeah. Because that's terrible. We used to, when we have guests, we used the guest used to tell a little about him or herself. Can you tell who are you, Oleg?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Oleg. I have a IT kind of background, and I graduated from the IT university many years ago, and I was fond of computers and programming since I was a kid. So I visited several faculty courses in school, in university, where I learned Turbo Pascal, Visual Basic, then I learned C++ programming languages. And then at the university, I started doing commercial projects in web development. So I was creating websites with PHP and HTML, a bit of JavaScript. And then I started to kind of gather some other developers around myself, and we kind of called it as a small company, right? So we started to call it a company. And when we were 4 or 5 people, we met Already On, and we've been cooperating for more than 10 years or even more since then. So now I mostly manage teams, or I manage different processes for different teams, making sure that our customers are happy, consulting our customers, also consulting our teams, taking part in so-called pre-sale process. When we meet a new client, and we need to provide the best solution for them after doing some kind of workshops, after analyzing what are their needs, what problems they want to solve with IT. So I usually take part in this pre-sale activities from a technical or from a kind of a product management point of view. And we are 80 people in Ukraine, developers, testers, designers, project managers. So basically everyone who is needed to develop any web or mobile project from scratch.
And you also, yeah, you also have been in Norway many, many, many times. Even speak a little Norwegian.
Yeah, gratulerer med dagen.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I've been to Norway many times. I think I stopped counting after 30, 3-0. So yeah, I've been many times. For the last 10 years, I've been to Norway 3 or 4 times each year. Yeah. Before Corona, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, that stops a lot because yeah. We in Norway have used also to be a lot in Sumi, because that's a city where we're from. You call it a small city, but in Norway it would have been the second biggest city in Norway. With, is it 370,000 people?
Yeah, it's at least 300,000 people, maybe 320, I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's relatively small city for Ukraine.
And that's around 30 miles or 350 kilometers from Kiev?
Yeah, 270-something kilometers from Kiev, right. So it's like 4 hours driving. From Sumy to Kiev, yeah, and the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ukraine is the largest exporter of IT services in Europe. I think we should talk a little about that before we start talking about the war situation. How is that working? The IT industry, it's the second biggest after agriculture, I think I heard.
Yeah, it's true. It's one of the most important industries right now in Ukraine, mostly because like 90% of this industry kind of, you know, export their services abroad. That means that we kind of attract cash to, you know, to Ukraine from abroad, euros and dollars, and that's quite important. People then spend those money within the country, and they kind of sponsor other industries. You know, they go and they buy clothes. They go and, you know, to a grocery store. They buy real estate and so on. So that's quite an important industry for Ukraine. Also, salaries in this industry are way higher than in any other industry in Ukraine, and that is one of the reasons that people are switching their professions, or, you know, parents send their kids to, you know, special schools, extra courses where they learn programming, then they go to the, you know, technical universities because parents understand that that's a very good profession for the future, which is also very well paid here in Ukraine.
How many is working in this industry?
I think it's more than 250,000 people, maybe even 280,000 people. When I started doing this kind of business, I think we were like 70 or 80,000.
Huh.
Yeah, probably even less. I don't remember.
I talked with the Ministry of Digitalization or... Yeah, in that was 2 years ago, Alexander
Bortnikov.
Yeah,
Bortnikov.
He was in Norway in a conference, so I interviewed him. But he said that the goal was to reach 500,000, half a million people in the IT industry in Ukraine, and that's quite big amount of people and employees. Do you think it will reach that?
Well, it's you know, it's hard to say. First it was, you know, Corona, which was bad at the beginning. Then it was kind of, it switched to good, I would say, because last year was crazy. Most of the you know, companies, IT companies here grew like 40-50% during the year. Now we have this, you know, war with Russia. So, you know, we will see. But yeah, I mean, there is a big potential. As I said, the educational, you know, system is going well, and if there are more courses, more, you know, universities, more faculties. University come to companies, they come to business and ask, you know, what we should teach, how we can help you to prepare specialists in a better way, so that when they graduate, they are more ready to kind of, you know, real world of IT business. So yeah, I mean, there is a big potential for that.
Yeah, we will see. The war can't last forever, so just hope it's going over soon, even though nobody know how that will end. The war start last Thursday. What did you do then, Oleg?
So we got up at like 5 a.m. In the morning from, you know, calls from your friends and family. So the first 3 or 4 days was like, you know, total panic. People didn't know what to do. Some people, you know, ran. Some people tried to move to safer places. A lot of people actually stayed. And for some cities, that's really bad that people, you know, decided to stay there. I mean, women, children, and retired people, first of all. It was like a lot of panic. But that panic was over after 3-4 days. Now we know what it is. I can say that we are now more prepared to this, you know, situation than we were at 5 a.m. On Thursday, 24th. It's a new life, I would say. People work as much as they can, during the day. They read the news. They call the, you know, parents, families. They volunteer. They send money to, you know, volunteer organizations. They do volunteering job themselves. Some people go to so-called territorial defense. It's like the local defense divisions that are mostly self-organized, so that they defend their city or their village. It's a big cyber war happening these days. We try to stop fake news in Russia. We try to stop propaganda. And we especially try to do that in Russia. So we don't want people in Russia to listen to the, you know, propaganda news that the army of Russia here is kind of
Nazis and
to get rid of
drug addicted
and all that crazy stuff that they tell to their people. So we many people, and even in our company, they work during the day and they take part in this cyber activities, cyber defense, or even cyber attack activities during evenings. So that's a new reality.
But Russia have done the same to Ukraine earlier, haven't they? They have attacked a lot of websites and databases.
Yeah, they did it. They are doing it these days. So that's why I call it cyber war.
Yeah.
Right. So they attack us and we do the same back. So yeah, it's a it's a lot of kind of informational activities that are happening, and I would say that in 2022, informational war is as much important as kind of military war, if I can say it like that, because it kind of brings panic to people. There are a lot of fake news. We heard a lot that there are a lot of provocations from Russians that they might execute here, even like make some deep fake videos of our president saying that we are capitulating So we kind of, we hear this news almost every day, so that people here are prepared that, you know, nobody is gonna, you know, stand back, will stand strong and will win.
Yeah, I've seen that it have popped up some channels on Telegram. Telegram is almost the same as WhatsApp for people that don't use it. So you have like a Telegram news channel. I saw one that was really bad, where they're reporting the dead Russian soldiers.
Yeah, we have a lot of them, right?
So that
governmental, and we also have like local ones, you know, channels from communities, different communities. We started the one, I started, you know, the one for Sumy, called Sumy IT Wartime. So we gather IT people from Sumy, even those who are not in Sumy these days, but originally are from Sumy, so that they can help, you know, Sumy in particular. That's my native town.
But when this, on Thursday, when the war started, you were in Sumy, and Sumy is just 40 kilometers from Russia, isn't it? Something like that, quite near.
Shame on me, I don't know the exact number on that, but yeah, it's quite close, right? So Sumy region,
yeah,
borders with Russia.
So you decided to move out of Sumy to be like operational?
Yeah, I moved to the central part in the morning, and that was quite, you know, quite a hard decision, because I have, you know, parents there. They didn't want to go because nobody realized that, you know, it is for real, right? You kind of, it's more like your brain don't want to accept it. You still think that, well, it should settle down, you know, quite quickly. Yeah, but I have 80 people behind me. I need to pay their salaries. I need to take care of, you know, of them and their families. So I cannot stay in the region which is, you know, quite close to Russia. So yeah, that's why I'm relatively safe right now, and I do a lot of volunteering work from here.
But when you traveled from Sumy to where you are now, which is like more western and south, away from Russia part, it's no reason to say what the name of the city is because nobody can pronounce it anyway. But when you traveled there, you did by car, right?
Yeah, I did by car. That was quite an experience, but yeah.
Yeah, did you experience any shooting or block post or anything on the way?
Yeah, there were many block posts, and I heard a lot of shooting, especially in the Sumy region.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but I'm okay, more or less. I mean, I know people that are in much worse conditions, so I cannot complain right now.
The people after Corona, you wasn't that centralized around Sumy anymore because people was used to work from home. So now it's people all are around Ukraine, and Ukraine is a very big country. How is that working out?
Yeah, so kind of during the last two and a half years, we kind of switched from being mostly Sumy company with a few people not in Sumy to kind of a Ukrainian company. So we are about 80 people right now, and only 35 or you up to 40 of them are in Sumy. So it's around half of our employees are in Sumy, or they grew up in Sumy, some of them moved, I mean, before. And we have around 20 people in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, and people in other cities. We have people in Kharkiv, a few people there. We have people in Odessa, in Lviv. So yeah, I think we have people in 19 cities of Ukraine these days. And we don't have any dependencies on physical location. All our servers are in cloud, on different, in different locations in Europe and United States. Our VPN server is in Germany. So that means that every employee can connect and work on their project from any city, any location, on this
planet. And that's a good thing that no hosting is actually in Ukraine.
No.
And what about the code?
Code is hosted on different servers. We use Git services GitHub or Bitbucket. So code is hosted outside, and it was always hosted outside Ukraine. So there are no servers, no code, no infrastructure in Ukraine, and we don't have any dependency on electricity in some office because there is some server, and if it's down, nobody can work. We don't have anything like that. And we use a lot of cloud tools like Slack for chatting, Jira for project management. So those are software as a service solution that we are buying by subscription from different providers. So yeah, we are 100% digital company these days, and we did that transition due to Corona. So I would say coronavirus kind of helped us to become like a fully remote or digital company, which is good right now for us.
But the people, they are sitting in their homes around in the whole country. I heard that some of the people from Sumi moved out west in the west direction. Was it around 10 people or something?
Some people moved to the western part, especially those who are in Kyiv. So we still have people in Sumy. We have a few guys in Kharkiv. Some people in Kyiv region, because not all of them are in the Kyiv city. They moved to smaller cities or to small villages where they have relatives, grandparents and so on. And some people moved to the western part. So I would say that we have people spread throughout the country. We had it like that before, and we still have it, just with a bit different proportion of people in different cities.
But the problems that you can see is that people are losing electricity or internet.
So it was not a problem for the last 10 days. Sumy, the city I'm from, didn't have electricity for one day, or like some parts of the city didn't have it for one day. Some parts didn't have just for a couple of hours. So it's so far it's not a big issue.
And they got it back?
Yeah, they got it back. So all our people have internet, regardless where they are, and all of them, they work. With a small exception of people that kind of sit in some small village, they move to their grandparents, and they don't have stable internet there. So we are in contact with everyone on a daily basis. We have a morning check-in. Our HR department, project managers, and team leads, they check with everyone, where you are, are you able to work, what's with the conditions, do you have internet. So we do that. We have new kind of wartime procedures. We do that on a daily basis, and then we identify the status of the team, of the project team, based on the status of each team member. And then we transparently say this to our clients. So far for the last 10 days we've been working. We didn't stop any project, even though we have a few guys who went to the army or to this territorial defense, and we keep keep supporting them.
Yeah, because that's the other problem that people are thinking about, that people get required to go out to fight physically.
Right now, there are more people willing to join the army or territorial defense that they can accept.
Yeah.
A big queues of men, wanting to join. So, and it's like this is like kind of big patriotic movement here in Ukraine. And there are different waves of mobilization.
Yeah, tell about the waves.
Yeah, so first of all, they call people with experience, with war experience, then people who had study all the kind of war thing in the university, because they have kind of a theoretical experience and some practical experience, and only then there will be a call for people with no experience. And in IT, there are many people in IT. I would say there are more people in IT that don't have any war experience or any even theoretical experience than those who have. So IT people are kind of, I would say, will be called the last if it happens, of course.
Yeah.
So right now, I mean, I talked to different companies here, different IT companies here, and 90% of their employees are safe, and they keep working. We tell our people that if you are safe, if you are relatively safe, you should work, because we need to keep working. We need money. You need money. Your family need money. The company needs money, and the country needs money. So even if you don't fight, even if you just work so far, it's you still help at the country. And we organize a lot of volunteering activities, even within our small company in Ukraine. We have a lot of activities. We made a website for Sumy to accept donations, and we are just launching it today. People help from any angle they can help.
That's impressive, and very impressive that you are starting this check-in every day, and that you are making new routines so fast.
Yeah. I mean, our HR department became kind of call center for our employees, because some of them are left in the cities which are bombed every day. They are online, they have internet, they have a mobile network, but they go to bomb shelters quite often. It's very hard to work when you need to go to the basement a few times a day. So yeah. So we try to provide that help, and we're also thinking of how we can relocate them. There are some cities where we cannot do anything right now, but when this option is possible, we will immediately relocate people from there. So we are making register of people that are willing to relocate with their families. And we're also talking to our friends and partners like you guys in Norway, for those who want to send their families out of Ukraine. So we are making kind of register of people, men can register their family, kids, parents, and tell if they have any friends abroad, if those friends can meet them, in Poland, or if they don't, then we know that we need to help them. So that's what we do as a company, to be sure that people are safe.
Yeah, Norway is accepting, taking in. A lot of people from Ukraine, or it's planned. I don't know if I have started yet.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do. I mean, everybody who wants to go, we will help for sure.
How else can Norway and the rest of the world help Ukraine?
Well, that's a good question. We keep asking NATO to close the air, but you know, we understand that. That's quite a tough decision, and it takes time because NATO doesn't want to explicitly, you know, take part in the war with Russia, and we understand, you know, the possible consequences. But yeah, I mean, spread the word. If you have friends from Russia, tell them we do that. I mean, we have many people here that have, you know, relatives in Russia, so we call them. And we tell the truth, and they don't believe because they watch, you know, TV.
Yeah.
They don't believe that, you know, Russians, you know, shelling. They send aircraft, you know, to strike cities and so on. So yeah, please, you know, spread the word, help, you know, donate. There are many, you know, donation accounts. Like I said. We just finished a website for Sumy, for a local fund that is collecting money, called Fund Sumy Fund, and they collect money.
What's the name of the website?
It's the website has a funny name. It's called Fund FOND dot Sumy dot UA. Like I'm fond of Sumy.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, FOND dot Sumy dot UA.
I put the URL in the description of the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You can
donate almost using, you know, any option like bank transfer, MoneyGram, Western Union, pay, you know, like a payment card, you know, PayPal, even you know, cryptocurrencies.
Well, I think that a lot of clients will think that they shouldn't bother Ukraine with new orders or more IT tasks. Do you need some time off, or do you need more projects to keep on working?
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, ways to help, which I forgot, you know, to mention. So to all our clients, please, you know, keep, you know, working with us as much as possible. I understand that, you know, the situation might change, but so far, as I told, we are safe. Most of our people, they work, and we haven't stopped any project for the last 10 days, you know, regardless of the situation. And we have people in different cities. And those, you know, cities have different conditions. We need work. People want, you know, to work. You know, when they work, they, you know, think less of the situation. They panic less. They read, you know, less news, and they bring more value. And it's also, like I said, many companies, they unite people around some volunteering activities. So, you know, we got new hobbies since last Thursday, and that's also good for people, like for, you know, for their emotional state. So yeah, I mean, please keep sending us work. We'll do our best, you know, to do it. Like our DevOps was doing deployment from a bomb, you know, shelter last week, when he did it successfully.
Yeah.
So. You know, people here are, you know, quite brave. You know, you probably saw photos or videos of people in the occupied, you know, regions that were, you know, going out, you know, with Ukrainian flags. They were, you know, stopping the tanks, you know, without any armor, any weapons. So yeah, I would say that that Ukrainians brave, brave people.
And because the fighting spirit is very good, I understand.
Absolutely.
So, but does it mean that people are more angry than depressed?
Well, yeah, I would say that there was even little euphoria during the first days. Like, you know, Russians didn't succeed. Like, they didn't succeed with any of the plans they had so far. So probably right now they are regrouping and building new plans. But they, you know, what's happening right now doesn't go as they planned completely. So, of course, that brings a lot of fighting spirit to Ukrainians. Right now there is more angry than depression or fear. But, like, I would say that next is that, you know, people will calm down and understand that we need to keep do what we do. The army needs, you know, to keep fighting, and we need to sponsor the army. So somebody needs to work to bring money to the country, to help their families and to help army, to help these, you know, volunteering organizations, help local defense and help Ukraine in general. So I haven't met a person for the last 10 days that was just panicking and was, you know, doing nothing. All my friends, all my, you know, relatives, all people, you know, from our company, they work. They, you know, they work during the day and they do whatever they can do, you know, after work. That's what we have. Yeah. So the spirit, you know, like a winning spirit, I wouldn't say like a fighting spirit, but let's use like a more general word or phrase. So a winning spirit is really high these days.
Yeah, and that's good. And a lot of analytic people say that that is also very important for winning the war. To the end of this podcast, I will say that in Norway, it's news all the time about Ukraine, and it's only focusing on supporting Ukraine, and I guess that goes for the whole western part of Europe, or yeah, most countries in the world all over, that they think it's terrible what's happening and they're supporting Ukraine as much as they can do, but not with forces yet. So we will see, Oleg. We talk every day.
Yeah, we do that. Thank you so much, Jens Christian, for your support. Thank you for the support that we get from Norway and from the whole Europe. Everything counts these days. And yeah, we stand strong here, and we believe that we win, and that's really important. So yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jens Christian.
Bye bye.
Digitaliseringspodden levert av Computerworld og Already On.